Hello everyone and welcome once again to In Their Shoes. My name is Vanessa Coleman and today I've got with me David Darling, who is the chairman of Dorset Out. So welcome David to our little show.
Vanessa, thank you very much indeed for having me. Good morning. What a great day this is.
It's amazing. So tell me, what's it like in your shoes? Tell me a little bit about your past and so as we get a flavour of who you are.
Basically, I've been in marketing and sales for almost all my life. And currently I have a business in Poole, which is to do with cartridge refilling and replacing toner cartridges. And I've been established there for about 15 years. My main background, I suppose, or part of my main background, not only is it in marketing, sales and marketing, but it's also been in the area of the marine life or the marine world, because part of the reason why I moved down to Poole was I actually wanted to sail the Atlantic. And I wanted to set up a charter business out in the Caribbean. So I moved to Poole when...
Where did you move from?
I moved from Camberley in Surrey.
Oh, yes.
And when the company that was promoting their particular boat contacted me, they were a company called Sadley Yachts, based out in Dorkings Road in Hanworthy. Sadly, they're not there anymore. But at the time, going back to the mid-80s, I actually bought one of their boats. And in October of that year, I actually set off from Pool Quay to the Caribbean and eventually did set up a charter business in the Caribbean.
How long did it take you to get from Pool to the Caribbean?
39 days.
I wouldn't know whether that's good or bad. Is that good or bad?
Well, I think it's probably average, because bearing in mind the size of the boat was only 34 foot.
And who was with you at the time?
Oh, now, who was with me? Now, that's a very good question, because I had an excellent team of people who were with me. The first person, of course, was my right-hand man, was a guy called John DeRitter. And John DeRitter, of course, has been an extremely competent and is an extremely competent sailor. And I also took on a married couple, or a newly married couple, who are both architects. They wanted the experience of sailing the Atlantic. And as I hadn't done it before, prudently, I hired a professional skipper to be part of the team to take me across.
Did you film it?
No, but we did take a number of pictures. And we had, of course, the logbook, which we wrote in on a, you know, on a daily basis.
So it's like a diary.
It is a diary, yes. And it's got some very interesting comments in there. But I can remember when I first said to my parents that I was actually going to do this, they said to me, well, my father...
Have you got insurance? That would be my first question.
Well, I had insurance, yes. I got that from a company called Yacht Guard. And, but the thing was that my father said to me, he said, well, son, he said, I think this is a great idea. And he said, you'll never be far away from land. So I said, but Dad, you know, when we get out into the Atlantic, I said, I'm going to be 700-900 miles away from the nearest land. And he said, son, he said, I don't mean that way, going like that. He said, I mean like that. And he pointed downwards. Oh. So I was thinking to myself, well, 6 miles away probably is absolutely right. Good sense of humour my dad had. But yes, 39 days.
Is he no longer with you?
Sadly not. No, he passed almost 11 years ago, about the same time that my mother did. So, no.
So have you been involved in your life politically with anything? Were you into politics at all?
No, I'd always voted for the Conservatives, and that I think was probably inherited from my parents. But yes, there had been no political connection whatsoever in all of my life, apart from possibly now the last 4 years.
So tell us how you got involved with UKIP, and tell us what happened in respect to that.
Well, UKIP was one of those platforms that I considered, because the party of Conservatives, as indeed the others, were not actually going to give me what I felt was the right thing to do as far as the country was concerned, and that was to ensure that we actually came out of the EU. Why? Because...
This was when David Cameron was... You're going back about 4 years. So
yes,
David
yes, 4 or 5 years now. But when I look at what he wanted to try and do, or what the Conservatives wanted to try and do, it didn't bode well with the fact that my father Had served in the Second World War, fought in the Second World War. In fact, I've even got his Dunkirk medal at home somewhere from coming off the beaches. And then my grandfather was also in the First World War. And I thought to myself, you know, these people, together with many, many, many others, all fought for this country and to get us out of a terrible turmoil. And I could only say to myself that I would think that probably both my father and my grandfather might well be turning in their grave, knowing that we, at the moment, are stuck in this EU nonsense.
Well, you had to honour them, didn't you? Your feelings. You had to think what they'd done and keep that in the family, I suppose.
I did, but, you know, they, as I said, my father's been long gone now, about 10 years. But for me, the most important thing was that as I progressed through the last 5 years of looking at the activity of different parties, political parties, I began to realise that perhaps my allegiance should change and did change. And it changed because I wanted to join an organisation that were very pro coming out of the EU. And this is the reason why I joined UKIP.
So can I be bold and ask how old you are now then?
Yes, you can. I'm going to be 70 in June of next year.
Well, guess what? That's two of us. Oh. I'm going to be 70 in June of next year.
Well, there you go.
Well, so you'll have to come on my little television programme as well, won't you?
I'd be only too pleased to, Vanessa. Thank you.
So anyway, so there, what was that defining moment? Can you remember where you moved away from the Conservatives?
I'm not too sure that there was a defining moment, only a realisation that just reading things in the media, seeing what was happening on television, listening to some of the debates that were taking place supposedly in Brussels. And it was brought, I suppose, home to me by a friend of mine who was saying, did I know the reason why we moved the Parliament from Brussels to Strasbourg on a regular basis? And I said, no. I said, but can you tell me, is that costly? And he said to me, he said, yes, David. He said, it would cost something like 2 million euros to transfer the whole of the Brussels organisation to Strasbourg. And I thought, this is just a waste of money and a waste of effort behind the economy, particularly at that time. We were facing a bit of a downturn, and it was important that we as a country pulled together to try and ensure that we could move forward in a way that gave us the opportunity of coming out of the doldrums and being a very profitable country again. Hardworking people, and to make sure that those people that were hardworking were supported in as many ways as possible.
So, David, do you think that it's an age thing that we get concerned about waste? Because I tell you, it's one of the things that I cannot abide. Because if you waste something in one area, for example, you haven't got the money to look after our old people. Do you think younger people realise about waste? Do you think it is different for... I don't know if you have any dealings with younger people who realise all these different things.
Well, it's very interesting you say that or ask the question, Vanessa, because last weekend, I was attending the South Dorset show in Dorchester.
And what were you doing there?
I was actually attending and manning a stand with many other people for Dorset Out. And the reason for the being there, of course, was to talk to as many people as possible about the reason why I felt that Dorset, as well as other counties and the whole country, should be out of the EU. And there was a man that came on the stand who was probably, I'm going to guess, 18, 19 years of age. Very bright chap, and he was talking to me about the reasons why we should come out of the EU. And I explained to him that, and I, as I mentioned to him, as I have done to you, about my father and my grandfather.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said to him, you know, this really is a question of handing this country over to the younger generation of this country, because this is your heritage. This is what many people have fought for.
Yes.
And it is a country that you should be extremely proud of and
yes.
want to continue.
Yes.
And you should become active as an 18, 19-year-old.
Yes.
I said, as far as I was concerned, you know, I'm approaching 70. And my day, I think, is gone.
Yes.
it's up to you as a younger generation to get in there. Then he said to me, well, what are your thoughts on Osborne's approach to our the government approach to looking at containing costs and making savings and to ensure that we actually got on to the right road with regard to our actual issues over our funds for the country and what we do with them.
You mean with regard to the EU?
Well, he was more talking, I think, about Osborne and the Conservatives.
All right.
And I said to him, well, look, in fairness, if we came out of the EU, we'd save ourselves something like £55 million a day in payments. I said, but we've got a £1.7 trillion debt. And I said, with a £1.7 trillion debt, we've got to get out of this. And I said to him that it is necessary to have in government a government that's going to be strong enough to make the decisions that are going to be harsh. But hang on a second, the decisions would not be that hard actually, if we came out of the EU, because we'd have so much more money that we'd be saving that we could use that money to the better of our country and also for the citizens of this country.
This is the thing that I find very frustrating. On a daily life, I meet lots of different people, and I would say 9.5, maybe 9.75 people haven't got a clue about what we pay in and to the EU. But even worse is a lot of people don't think we pay anything in. So there is this lack, of course, all the media thing, the BBC, etc. Nobody gets out there and says, well, this is what we do. They only say the good things that suit themselves. And of course, it's very unbalanced reporting, isn't it?
Totally agree. Absolutely.
So tell us what the Dorset Out campaign is about then.
Well, to give you an example, after the elections took place and the results were discovered on the 7th and 8th of May, it became quite apparent that there were a number of people from a number of areas, and I say a number of areas, not necessarily UKIP, but also the Lib Dems, who were very disappointed at the results of what actually took place on the 7th and the 8th of May. And it was apparent to me that
I suppose we have to include the Greens as well, because they didn't get anything like, but of course it was UKIP that really suffered.
Well, it was UKIP, and I know for sure the Lib Dems actually suffered a lot more than we did, because in real terms, when we had 30.5 million people who actually voted and we got 4 million of those votes, 12 nearly 13% of the country who voted were voting for UKIP.
Yes.
And the other great thing too for me was the fact that we had so many second places throughout the whole of the country. And South Thanet, who came in with something like 32 councillors that took over the whole of that particular, took over the whole of the council, I think to myself, marvellous, what a fantastic result we actually did achieve.
Yeah.
And I believe too that Nigel Farage was very correct in saying that probably it could have been something like 6 million, because had it not been for the fact that the Conservatives, under the guidance of Lyndon Cosby, put in a scare tactic of saying, would you want the economy run by the by
SNP and Labour? Yeah.
Meant that there were a number, and I know for sure that there are one or two, probably more than that, but certainly one or two that I know of, who are UKIP supporters that actually put their cross down on the blue box.
Yes.
So for me, it's more a question of now trying to identify what we should be doing for the future, because where we suffer, I think, is the fact at the moment, the 7th of May was a date that we knew was going to be the election.
Yes.
All we have at the moment is 2017, by the end of, is going to be somewhere in that period of time, the referendum for the country to vote on getting in or remaining in of the EU or coming out of the EU. And so this moving goalpost is something that at the moment we haven't got to grips with. And this is a reason why I felt that it was important that we should try and get an organisation together as quickly as possible to ensure that we started now on getting out of the EU and campaigning for getting out of the EU, hence the birth of Dorset Out.
Wouldn't it be good if all the counties replicated that?
Well, it would be, but I think the first part would be to consider that the UKIP constituencies of eight individual branches were all together on this and making sure that we work together as a team. Because in fairness, I think when you look at what we did, in many cases, we were a little fragmented. We should have been a much, much closer network of our team, as it were.
Yeah.
But in real terms, when I look at the work that's now been put in this particular campaign by David Nevett, myself and others, we have now been talking to other groups about Dorset Out.
Yes.
And they are very keen on the idea of actually promoting perhaps Somerset Out or Wiltshire Out or Gloucestershire Out.
Yes, well, we're leading the way in Dorset once again.
Absolutely, and we've done that for a number of years now.
Yes, so tell me, how are you formulating this? What are you expecting to do? How are you expecting to get the message out there? Because like I've said to you, I meet people, in fact, yesterday, I met a guy and he said, oh, he definitely wanted to stay in. But when I asked him why, he didn't really know. But I think there's so many people that have been bamboozled by the propaganda and they don't really know. But they think that that's the way to go. How are you going to overcome that?
Well, I think the first thing for us to do is to recognise that there are talents within all of the branches that we have within Dorset. And I'm talking about the UKIP branches. And so the first thing that we've done is to look at a whole number of people that could actually become part of that team. Mm. And so it's a grassroots affair. It's a grassroots approach to actually getting in touch with people, talking to them about the fact that this is why we want to come out of the EU.
Yes.
Simple messages, truthful messages that give to the public the right reasons why we should exit the EU. And so our start for the campaign really is a question of getting together specialists, people who are very good at certain jobs in different constituencies and in branches, and then saying to them, okay, let's work together as a team to ensure that we have Dorset Out.
Mm.
And the Dorset Out program is really, as I say, a grassroots operation. What does grassroots mean? It means that we are looking at talking to people all the time. We're trying to focus on getting the point of view across, as I said, honestly and professionally, so that people can talk to individuals. So if you look at Dorset, we've got approximately 1,500 members of UKIP people. And I'm now adding others from other parties and from other businesses, because this is an organisation.
It's cross-party.
It's a cross-party. It's a cross-business. It's looking at everybody who, doesn't matter what their background is, doesn't matter what they voted for, if they're keen on coming out of the EU, we would like them to be part and parcel of Dorset Out.
Yes. I personally think there's a lot of Conservatives. I mean, I speak for Bournemouth East here, but The people that I know that are Conservative, most of them want to come out of the EU. So I think this is why it's important that Dorset Out covers all parties, everybody, because this is more important than any one political party. This is about our country, the future of our country.
It's the future of our country, but it's also the future of our children.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
And that's vitally important. I mean, my brother has three children grown up with their own children now. They're married with their own children. And unfortunately, it's those youngsters that will suffer, I believe, if they do not actually understand what the real reasons are. Their parents don't understand what the real reasons are for wanting to come out of the EU. I make sure, and I want to make sure, that people understand what those reasons are.
So how would you say we can infiltrate young people? Because a few weeks ago I interviewed Prim, who was been to university, and she now worked in the coffee shop. And she talked about working in a hospice and lack of money. And of course, at the end of as I always do, how would she vote? And she said to stay in the EU because the reason she gave, I think it was that she felt safe in Europe. You see, they get the message wrong that Europe isn't the EU. And we've got to disabuse them of this thinking that, you know, maybe they think they won't be able to travel, or I don't know. We've got to do a very positive campaign, I think. Or would you turn it on its head and say, would we do a campaign to say, look what will happen if you vote yes? Because when I say to people that we would have to keep the, we would have to eventually take the euro on, they go, oh, no, 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 no. So,
well, as far as taking the euro on, the Lisbon Treaty states that in 2020, all member states must have their economy using the euro, which everybody, I'm sure, has seen the catastrophe that that particular policy has caused for the current 27 member states that are actually part of the euro. And I have to say that I do feel extremely sorry for Greece, because I felt that at some stage they would be far, far better off going back to the drachma. I still think that they'd be much better off going back to the drachma. It will be a very tough hill to climb, but eventually they should get to the top and overcome that problem of not having their currency set to the currency of 26 other member states. So it's important, I think, for them to recognise that the EU, looking at trying to dominate the European 28 member states and more, if others come in, by demanding that they should be part and part of the euro, is an absolute folly. I believe that the individual countries should have their own currency, and that they should be able to make sure that their currency reflects the value of their country.
Exactly.
And indeed, I, you know, you can go back perhaps, Vanessa, the same as I can.
The ERM?
Well, ERM, one thing, but I was thinking more along the lines of when you actually went to the bank and you got your pesetas, you got 300 pesetas to the pound, and then off you went and you had your holiday and you did your English breakfast in the morning that was going to cost you 250 pesetas. But then if the country wasn't doing that well, you then managed to get 350 pesetas to your pound on the next year.
And that was actually part of the excitement of going somewhere, was the different money. It's all part and parcel.
It was, but at the same time, because our currency would have been stronger and the Spanish currency would have been weaker, that's why, of course, they would set their rate to ensure that our pound got either 300 or 325 or 350. And that's the way it works. Unfortunately, as we know, the currency is the EU, is the euro, and the individual countries cannot do anything about it. Mm. And unfortunately, the pegged rate for all of those countries is set such that you just find yourself in a position, or they find themselves in a position, where they can't move forward. It's just failing because the euro is not a currency for everyone.
Well, let's bring it down to brass tacks, as my mother used to say. It's like as if you mix lots of people together. If you're in company of somebody very rich, somebody poor, whatever, you can't socialise on the same level, i.e. if you want to go to a certain restaurant, some people couldn't afford it, others could. So this is what happens in real life. If you mix in your social circles accordingly, normally, to the pound in your pocket, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that when you look at, well, actually going back to something you raised a few minutes ago, that was about the youngsters of our country. Unfortunately, there seems to be creeping into schools this perhaps persuasion by the teachers that indeed the EU is a very safe place for us to be in. And the answer for me is actually, I don't, first of all, believe that they should be telling their children that they have a charge over, that is the case, without some serious debate and the opportunity of other people stepping in and expressing a view as to why they think they shouldn't be in the EU. And that, I think, is an important issue to address, because the children of today will, in many cases, I'm sure, believe what the teacher tells them.
Yes.
And if the teacher's telling them untruths, then unfortunately it has a knock-on effect on how they reflect and see where we stand as a country within Europe. It was interesting how the recent problem that took place over Russia invading the Crimea and looking at parts of the Ukraine. People have said, well, you know, we're a very strong country and we're really up there as far as being involved in all the activity that takes place. In many cases, we were and we used to be. But people try and fob you off by saying, well, still a very strong country. Yes, in some parts we are. But if that is the case, how is it that when a meeting took place between Putin and the EU, along went Merkel, and Francois Hollande.
Yes.
Where was David Cameron in all of this? And I say to myself, if we are supposed to be that well thought of, how come we weren't included in this meeting? And how come it was just those two?
I think one of the reasons that we are so different is we are an island. We've always been an island, and there is a mentality about island people. It is totally different. Maybe they see Great Britain as difficult because we don't give in to things, do we? We are different, I think, from all the other people that are in the EU.
We're very different, but I would also say as a nation, I would think we're extremely caring. I would say that when it comes to a tsunami somewhere over in the Far East, we're the first country to put our hands in our pocket, straight down to the bank and put money in the boxes that they may have there at the checkouts. And exactly the same for any of the other issues that have taken place. And of course, recently, what we've seen is a massive migration of people from Syria and from other parts of the world that you have to ask yourself, what is it we're actually doing? We have committed to another 20,000 over the next parliament, 5 years, 4.5. But in some cases, people are saying, well, that actually is not enough. Well, it might not be enough. On the other hand, you have to say to yourself, well, as a country, we are a small island. You're right, yes. We are an island. We can only do so much. And it seemed absolute folly to me to say, well, here we are helping a number of people. Bearing in mind, my understanding is that we've already taken in a quantity of refugees so far, that the EU has now decided that those people that are taking in refugees will in fact be charged for that particular privilege, but they will also be given an amount of money in euros of something like 4,000 odd euros per candidate to accept them into their country. But in overall terms, when I look at the poverty, the fact that these people have got no homes, they've been shelled, they've been bombed out. Those desperate migrants, those desperate asylum seekers must be given some, well, not some, but a lot of compassion about what they actually do and where they do it. And I'm really pleased to see that in the press that, you know, there are a number of countries, even including now America, that seem to be stepping up to the plate to take in genuine asylum seekers who are genuinely displaced rather than perhaps the money seekers.
Well, of course, if we look back, it was Nigel Farage years ago said that we should be taking care of the Syrian refugees. And I think it's right that I have to say, maybe controversially, but I do think that we should look after the Christian Syrians first and foremost, because this is initially a Christian country, and haven't the Christians been persecuted more than anybody in these countries?
You're absolutely right. But from my standpoint, I find it a little bit off-putting when you get people like Bob Geldof and others who start to offer rooms in their homes for a number of migrants. And it was interesting to read a press article the other day that a councillor candidate had actually asked Mr. Geldof whether or not it was at all possible for the offer to be extended to the homeless in this country that we already have.
Well, particularly the veterans, the people that fought for our country, and probably it's affected them mentally, physically, and they're homeless. I think it's terrible.
I totally agree, and I would want to make sure that we try to look after as many of these genuine asylum seekers as we possibly can. But also bear in mind that we have our own problems, and we have to deal with those in a way that is sensible, fair, and totally realistic.
Yes. Well, I mean, I know the people of our country are, like you say, very, very compassionate. But unfortunately, David, everything in life comes back to money, doesn't it?
Well, exactly correct. And that's the reason why it's a nice little circle that you've brought me around, Vanessa, because with Dorset out, this is a campaign that does need money.
So Any listeners, what would you ask them to do?
Well, we have a number of items that we've already paid for that are things like badges and car stickers, and there's a number of other items that we want to have printed. And if anybody felt that they'd like to donate some money to our cause, however small or however large it is, if they could make a check payable to Dorset Out and perhaps pop it to you, Vanessa.
Yes.
Wherever you want them to drop it off at.
But you have a website that they can go onto.
They have a website. We have a website, absolutely. And that is the opportunity, I think, for them to see where we are as Dorset Out by looking at the website. So it's dorsetout.co.uk.
Okay, well, David, it's been really good to talk to you. I am not going to ask you that question because I think the audience will have gathered which way you are going to vote. So I wish you all the best with your Dorset Out campaign, and I hope you get many more people across the spectrum and that it's a very successful campaign.
Vanessa, thank you for having me on your show. It's been a great show. I've listened to it over the last number of weeks. And I do hope that the end of this session is a question of you saying to me, get out.
Yeah, leave it out. Just leave it out. Well, yes. But anyway, I'm going to have you back in a few months to let us know how the campaign's going anyway.
That would be great. Look forward to it enormously.
Thank you,
Vanessa.
Bye.
Bye.